Chapter 11. Introducing UltraWord. First, there was oral trad, upgraded 10,000 years later by the rhyming for easier recall, Oral Trad Plus. For thousands of years, this was the only story operating system, and it is still in use today. The system branched in two about 20,000 years ago, on one side with CaveDub Pro, Forerunner of Paint Plus version 2.3, Grecian Urn version 1.2, Sculpt Marble version 1.4, and the latest, all-encompassing Super Artistic Expression 5. The other strand, the Picto-Phonetic Storytelling Systems, started with Clay Tablet version 2.1 and went through several competing systems, Wax Tablet, Papyrus, Vellum Plus, before merging into the award-winning Scroll, which was upgraded 8 times to version 3.5 before being swept aside by the all-new and clearly superior Book version 1. Stable, easy to store and transport, compact and with a workable index, Book has led the way for nearly 1,800 years. Wordmaster Xavier Libris, Story Operating Systems, The Early Years. A small and rather pallid-looking man took his position on the dais. He could only just see over the lectern. He wore a white, short-sleeved shirt and was almost weighed down by the number of pens in his top pocket. We all took a seat and gazed at him with interest. UltraWord had been the talk of the well for ages, and everyone was keen to learn whether the rumours of its technical virtuosity were true. "Good morning, everyone," began Libris in a nervous voice. "Over the next 30 minutes, I will try to explain a little about our latest operating system, Book version 9, which we have codenamed UltraWord." There was silence as the agents mulled this over. I got the feeling that this was not just important, but really important, like being at the signing of a peace accord or something. Even Bradshaw, who was no fan of technology, was leaning forward and listening with interest, a frown etched on his forehead. Libris pulled the first sheet off a flip chart. There was a picture of an old book. "Well," he began, "when we first came up with the page concept in Book version 1, we thought we'd reached the zenith of story containment. Compact, easy to read, and by using integrated page number and spine title technologies, we had a system of indexing far superior to anything Scroll could offer. Over the years..." Here he flipped the chart over to show us varying degrees of books through the ages. "We have been refining the book system. Illustrations were the first upgrade at 1.1, standardized spelling at version 3.1, and vowel and irregular verb stability in version 4.2. Today we use Book version 8.3, one of the most stable and complex imaginotransference technologies ever devised. The smooth transfer of the written word into the reader's imagination has never been faster." He stopped for a moment. We all knew that Book version 8.3 was excellent, apart from a few typos that crept in and the variable quality of stories, neither of which were the system's fault. It was good. Very good indeed. "Constructing the books down in the sub-basements, although time-consuming, seems to work well even if it is a little chaotic." There were murmurs of agreement from the assembled agents. It was clear that no one much liked it down there. "But," went on Libris, "endlessly recycling old ideas might not hold the reader's attention for that much longer. The Council of Genre's own market research seems to indicate that readers are becoming bored with the sameness of plot lines."
"I think it's already happened," said the bellman,
then checked himself quickly, apologised for the interruption and let Libris carry on. "But to understand the problem, we need a bit of history. When we first devised the book system, 1,800 years ago, we designed it mainly to record events. We never thought there would be such a demand for story. By the 10th century, story usage was so low that we still had enough new plots to last over 1,000 years. By the time the 17th century arrived, this had lowered to 600, but there was still no real cause for worry. Then, something happened that stretched the operating system to the limit."
"Mass literacy," put in Miss Havisham.
"Exactly," replied Libris.
demand for written stories increased exponentially during the 18th and 19th centuries. 10 years before Pamela was published in 1740, we had enough new ideas to last 400 years. By the time of Jane Austen, this had dropped to 30. By Dickens's time, ideas were almost wholly recycled, something we have been doing on and off since the 13th century to stave off the inevitable. But by 1884, for all intents and purposes, we had depleted our stock of original ideas. There was a muttering amongst the collected jurisdiction agents.
"Flatland," said Bradshaw, after pausing for a moment's reflection.
"It was the last original idea, wasn't it?"
"Pretty much.
The few leftover pieces were mopped up by the sci-fi movement until the 1950s. But as far as pure ideas are concerned, 1884 was the end. We were expecting the worst, a meltdown of the whole book world and a wholesale departure of readers. But that didn't happen. Against all expectations, recycled ideas were working."
"But isn't it the way they are told?"
asked Havisham, in her not-to-be-argued-with voice.
"Surely the permutations of storytelling are endless."
"Large, perhaps, but not infinite, Miss Havisham. What I'm trying to say is that once all the permutations are used up, there will be nowhere for us to go. The 20th century has seen books being written and published at an unprecedented rate. Even the introduction of the procrastination, 1.3, and writer's block, 2.4. Outlander viruses couldn't slow the authors down. Plagiarism lawsuits are rising in the outland. Authors are beginning to write the same books. The way I see it, we've got a year, possibly 18 months, before the well of fiction runs dry." He paused to let this sink in.
"That's why we have to go back to the drawing board and rethink the whole system."
He flipped the chart again, and there were audible gasps.
On the chart was written 32 plot story systems. "As you know," he went on, "every book operating system has at its heart the basic 8-plot architecture we inherited from oral trad. As we used to say, no one will ever need more than 8 plots."
9, if you count coming of age," piped up Beatrice.
"Isn't that journey of discovery?" said Tweed.
"What's Macbeth, then?" asked Benedict. "Bitter rivalry / revenge, my dear," answered Havisham.
"I thought it was temptation," mused Beatrice, who liked to contradict Benedict whenever possible.
"Please," said the bellman. "We could argue these points all night, and if you let Libris finish, you can."
The agents fell silent. I guess this was a perennial argument.
"So the only way forwards," continued Libris, "is to completely rebuild the operating system. If we go for a 32-plot basis for our stories, there will be more ideas than you or I will know what to do with. The book world won't have seen such an advance since the invention of movable type."
"I am always supportive of new technology, Mr. Libris," said Lady Cavendish kindly. "But isn't the popularity of books a fair indication of how good the current system actually is?"
"It depends what you meant by popular. Only 30% of the Outland read fiction on a regular basis. With UltraWord, we aim to change all that. But I'm running ahead of myself. An abundance of new ideas is only half the story. Let me carry on and tell you what other benefits the new system will give us."
Libris flipped the chart again. This time it read, "Enhanced features."
"Firstly, UltraWord is wholly reverse compatible with all existing novels, plays, and poetry. Furthermore, new books written with this system will offer bonus features that will enhance and delight."
"I say," asked Bradshaw slowly, "how do you hope to improve a book?"
"Let me give you an example," replied Libris enthusiastically. "In books that we know at present, dialogue has to be dedicated to the people who are talking, as the reader has no idea who is speaking from the words alone. This can be tricky if we want a large scene with many people talking to one another. It's very easy to get bogged down in the 'said George, replied Michael, added Paul' and such like. With the UltraWord enhanced character identification, a reader will have no trouble placing who is speaking to whom without all those tedious dialogue markers. In addition, UltraWord will be bundled with PlotPot Plus,
which gives the reader a potted précis if they are lost or have put the book down unfinished for a few months or more. Other options will be ReadZip, Page Glow, and 3 music tracks.
How will the reader get these new features to work? Asked Lady Cavendish.
There will be a preferences page inserted just after the frontispiece.
Touch sensitive? I asked.
No, replied Libris excitedly. Read sensitive. Ultra words that know when they are being read. On the preferences page, you can also select word clot, which adjusts the vocabulary to the reader. No more difficult words, or if you like difficult words, you can increase the vocabulary complexity.
There was silence as everyone took this in.
But to get back to your point, Lady Cavendish, a lot of people reject fiction because they find reading tedious and slow. At present levels, the fastest throughput we can manage is about 6 words per second. With UltraWord, we will have the technology to quadruple the uptake, something that will be very attractive to new readers. Or slow ones.
Cards on the table and all that, Libris, said Bradshaw in a loud voice. Technology is all very well, but unless we get it absolutely right, it could turn out to be a debacle of the highest order.
You didn't like the ISBN positioning system either, Commander, replied Libris. Yet book navigation has never been easier. They stared at one another until a loud belch rent the air. It was Falstaff.
I have lived, he said,
getting to his feet with a great deal of effort,
through much in my time, some good, some bad. I was witness to the great vowel shift and remember fond those better days when puns, fat people, and foreigners were funny beyond all. I saw the novel rise and the epic poem fall. I remember when you could get blind drunk, eat yourself ill, and still have change for a whore out of sixpence. I remember when water would kill you, and spirits would save you. I remember...
Is there a point to all this? Asked Libris testily.
Ah,
replied Falstaff, trying to figure out where he was going with all this.
Oh, yes, I was there for the much-heralded version 4 upgrade. Change the way we read forever. Quoth the Council of Genres. And what happened? The deep text crash of 1842. Almost everything by Euripides, Aeschylus, and Sophocles gone forever. And we created grammarcites.
It was never proven that version 4 created the grammarcites, Sir John.
Come, come, Libris. Have you dried your brain?
I was there. I saw it.
I know.
Libris put up his hands.
I didn't come here to argue, Sir John. I just want to stick to the facts. Anyhow, UltraWord is incompatible with grammar sites. Text will be locked. They'll have nothing to feed on.
You hope, sir.
We know, replied Libris firmly, adding more slowly, listen, version 4 was a big mistake. We freely admit that. Which is why we have taken so long to rigorously test UltraWord. It is no small boast that we call it the ultimate reading experience. He paused for a moment. It's here to stay, ladies and gentlemen, so get used to it.
He expected another attack from Falstaff, but King Hal's old friend had sat down and was shaking his head sadly. No one else added anything. Libris took a step back and looked pointedly at the bellman, who tingled his bell.
Well, thank you all for listening to Wordmaster Libris's presentation, and I would like to thank him for coming here today to tell us all about it.
The bellman started to clap his hands and we joined in, with the notable exceptions of Falstaff and Bradshaw.
Presentation booklets will be available shortly, said the bellman,
who had suddenly begun to fidget.
Individual assignments will be given out in 10 minutes, and remember, let's be careful out there. That's it. Session's over.
And he tingled his bell. Libris stepped down from the dais and melted away before Bradshaw had a chance to question him further. Miss Havisham rested her hand on his shoulder. Bradshaw was the only man to whom I had ever seen Miss Havisham show any friendliness at all. Born of a long working association, I think.
I'm too long in the tooth for this game, Havisham, old girl,
he muttered.
You and me both, Trafford, But who'd teach the young ones? She nodded in my direction. I hadn't been described as young for over a decade.
I'm spent, Estella, said Bradshaw sadly. No more new technology for me. I'm going back to my own book for good. At least I won't have to put up with all this nonsense in Bradshaw of the Congo. Goodbye, old girl.
Goodbye, Commander. Send my regards to Mrs. Bradshaw.
Thank you. And to you too, Miss... I'm sorry. What was your name again?
Thursday next.
Of course it is. Well, toodaloo.
And he smiled, tipped his pith helmet and was gone.
Dear old Bradshaw, mused Miss Havisham.
He's retired about 12 times a year since 1938. I expect we'll see him again next week.
Ah,
muttered the bellman as he approached.
Havisham and next.
He consulted his clipboard for a moment. You weren't in the Outland on another speed attempt, were you?
Me?
Replied Havisham.
Of course not.
Well, murmured the bellman, not believing her for an instant. The Council of Genres have told me that any jurisfiction staff found abusing their privileges will be dealt with severely.
How severely?
Very severely.
They wouldn't dare,
replied Havisham in the manner of an elderly duchess.
Now, what have you got for us? You're chairing the Wuthering Heights Rage Council in session. I've done my 6. It's Falstaff's turn.
The bellman raised an eyebrow.
Now that's not true, is it? You're only on your 3rd. Changing councillors every week is not the best way to do it.
Everyone has to take their turn, Miss Havisham.
Even you.
She sighed.
Very well.
Good. Better not keep them waiting.
The bellman departed rapidly before Havisham could answer. She stood silently for a moment, a bit like a volcano deciding whether to erupt or not. After a few moments, her eyes flicked to mine.
Was that a smile?
She snapped. No, Miss Havisham, I replied, trying to hide my inner amusement that someone like her would try to counsel anyone about anything, especially rage.
Please do tell me what you think is so very funny. I really am very keen to know.
It was a smile, I said carefully.
Of surprise. Was it now? Well, before you get the mistaken belief that I am somehow concerned about the feelings of such a pathetic bunch of characters, let's make it clear that I was ordered to do this job. Same as being drafted on to Heathcliff protection duty. I'd sooner he were dead, personally speaking, but orders are orders. Oh, fetch me a tea and meet me at my table.
There was a lot of excited chatter about the upgrade to Ultra Word, and I picked up snatches of conversation that ran the full gamut from condemnation to full support. Not that it mattered. Jurisfiction was only a policing agency and had little say in policy. That was all up to the higher powers at the Council of Genres. It was sort of like being back at Spec Ops. I bumped into Vernum Dean at the table of refreshments.
Well, said Vernum, helping himself to a pastry. What do you think?
Bradshaw and Falstaff seem a bit put out.
Caution is sometimes an undervalued commodity,
Vernum said warily. What does Havisham think?
I'm really not sure.
Vern, said Beatrice, who had just joined us along with Lady Cavendish.
Which plot does Winnie the Pooh have?
Triumph of the Underdog,
he suggested.
Told you, said Beatrice, turning to Cavendish. Bear with little brain triumphs over adversity. Happy?
No, she replied.
It's journey of discovery all the way.
You think every story is journey of discovery.
It is,
they continued to bicker as I selected a cup and saucer. Have you met Mrs. Bradshaw yet? Asked Dean. I told him that I hadn't.
When you do, don't laugh or anything.
Why?
You'll see.
I poured some tea for Miss Havisham, remembering to put the milk in first. Dean ate a canapé and asked, So how are things with you these days? Last time we met, you were having a little trouble in the Outland. I'm living in the Well now, as part of the character exchange program.
Really? What a lark, How's the latest Farquhar getting along?
Well, I think, I told him, always sensitive to Dean's slight shame at being a one-dimensional evil squire figure. The working title is Shameless Love.
Sounds like a Farquhar, sighed Dean.
There'll probably be a rustic serving girl who is ravaged by someone like me, cruelly cast from the house to have her baby in the poorhouse, only to have their revenge 10 chapters later.
Well, I don't know.
It's not fair, you know, he said, his mood changing. Why should I be condemned, reading after reading, to drink myself to a sad and lonely death 8 pages before the end?
Because you're the bad guy, and they always get their comeuppance in Farquhar novels.
It's still not fair, he scowled. I've applied for an internal plot adjustment countless times, but they keep turning me down. You wouldn't have a word with Miss Havisham, would you? She's on the Council of Genres Plot Adjustment Subcommittee, I'm told.
Would that be appropriate? Me talking to her, I mean?
Not really, he retorted. But I'm willing to try anything. Speak to her, won't you?
I told him I would try, but decided on the face of it that I probably wouldn't. Dean seemed pleasant enough at jurisfiction, but in the Squire of Hypotenuse he was a monster. Dying sad, lonely, and forgotten was probably just right for him, in narrative terms anyway. I gave the tea to Miss Havisham, who abruptly broke off talking to Perkins as I approached. She gave me a grimace and vanished. I followed her to the second floor of the Great Library, where I found her in the Bronte section already with a copy of Wuthering Heights in her hand. I knew from Havisham's hatred of men that she probably did have a soft spot for Heathcliff, but I imagined it was only the treacherous marsh below Penistone Crag.
"Did you meet the three witches, by the way?" she asked.
"Yes," I replied.
"They told me, ignore everything they say. Look at the trouble they got Macbeth into. But they said, I don't want to hear it. Clap-trap and mumbo-jumbo. They are troublemakers and nothing more. Understand?
Sure."
"Don't say sure. It's so slovenly. What's wrong with yes, Miss Havisham?"
Yes, Miss Havisham.
Better, I suppose. Come, we are Bronte-bound.
And so saying, we read ourselves into the pages of Wuthering Heights.